Wolf, get away from those sheep.
Bollocks.
You're listening to the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast, broadcasting from Fort Worth in the great state of Texas. Now, get ready for this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd.
Welcome to this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd. Today we have with us Frank Kane. Frank, good to see you.
You too. I'm super excited to hang out with you folks tonight. Love it.
Thank you for coming on, Frank. I actually tracked you down on Instagram. I'd like to say like a private detective, but it was more of a stalker because I was trying to find a Bigfoot expert. And you were actually the first person who replied to me. I reached out to a bunch of people. They all replied eventually, but you were the quickest, so you won. but your Instagram handle on there, or your group, is known as Squatch Stitcher. Now, I'm sure some of our audience will actually check you out after the show, but can you tell them where that name came from?
Yeah, definitely. So obviously, I have a passion for Sasquatch, Bigfoot. And another thing that I do, I go to town on crocheting. So I crochet huge scarves and mittens and hats and do some knitting. And I was like, hey, you know, I need some type of creative outlet. So I'm going to join both of them, just making it happen. And I create an Etsy page and sold a lot of my stuff. And it's just been super fun. I like to post things out on social media, you know, fun little things and memes and little jokey things about Bigfoot. And it's just a passion of mine.
Yeah. Now, don't let anybody ever tell you that crocheting is not a manly activity. When I grew up in England, I actually lived for about 18 months in a really small village, and we only had two stores. We had one kind of corner store, which was known as the inconvenience store, because they rarely had anything you wanted. Like, all the candy was sold out. After school, there'd be a mad rush. All the kids would sprint like half a mile and form a line outside. And so you'd be making your mind up outside the store what you wanted, but everything started disappearing by the time you got to the counter. Like, there's a box of Kleenex. That's all you had left to buy. But the other store we had in the village was actually a kind of knitting kind of wool store. So all the kids kind of naturally just learned how to knit. So I was making like outfits for my G.I. Joe and stuff. And like, even some of the school kind of like hard kids, they had a side business going. They were like making all these G.I. Joe uniforms and selling them at recess.
Side hustle. That is amazing. I mean, if I would have had that skill back in the day, I would have been unstoppable with my Star Wars characters. I'm telling you. I love it.
Yeah. Got it. So can you just give us a little bit about your background, not related to, you know, Bigfoot, just kind of where you grew up, where you live now, and what you do for a regular job and stuff?
I'm originally from a little town in Iowa, rural Iowa. Carroll is the town, and, you know, grew up there. And I met my wife. We grew up like a block away from each other, went to college together. We went to a school for music. And then we moved to Madison, Wisconsin, and we just stuck here. Usually they say that once you come to Madison and you get the feel and it's got that good old vibe that you don't want to leave. And so it really does have a great feel. So my regular role is I help in the healthcare space with electronic medical record systems. And the other thing I do is I'm a executive director of an opera company called Fresco Opera. And that's kind of that creative piece that I miss right now as the pandemic is doing its thing. So that's kind of what swayed me into doing that other passion, which is crocheting and talking about Sasquatch.
So talking about Sasquatch, I mean, what got you interested in Bigfoot?
I would say I was a kid and I was watching this amazing show that was hosted by Leonard Nimoy, and it was called In Search Of. And I don't know if you've ever heard of that show or not. It was like a late 70s type of show. And so I'm sitting there in my living room watching this thing, and I'm just enthralled by it. You know, this whole like big hairy beast type of creature that could potentially be real. And it was both exciting and scary at the same time. So I was just glued to that TV. And at the same time, this is crazy, but at the same time, my mother actually was on the lookout for something that had been getting in our rabbit hutch. I recall, like, they were completely torn apart. The rabbits were destroyed by something that got in there and basically tore that hutch apart as well. So she was on the hunt for something that was taking them out. So I'm watching the show. At the same time, I hear a gunshot and I just like hit the deck in the house. I'm like, what the Hades is happening? And my mom comes back in the house with this shotgun and she's got her lip bleeding because she has no idea how to use this gun. She just got it up and she swear to goodness gracious that there was some big animal beast thing in the back that she saw rustling in the grove area and she tried to take it out. And that's what kind of inspired my fascination for this thing. I kind of ended up taking both this story I was watching on TV and this thing that was happening in my own family's life and married the two. And that later that week, it was funny because I said to myself, you know what? I need to go find this beast. I need to figure out what's happening. I ended up recruiting the neighbor kids, the Gatch kids, they were, that was the last name. And they had like 8 or 10 kids. And we created some posse. And we took my dog, the dog's name was Polyester. We took my dog Polyester on the hunt and we went in search of Bigfoot. So that was the whole like combination and thing that got me propelled into loving this cryptid. So there you go.
Right now, I have to ask this question off the bat, really, but do you actually believe Bigfoot exists? And if you do, what kind of convinced you? Because I know there are a lot of researchers in different topics who don't necessarily believe what it is they're researching. And sometimes that is a good balance to the other researchers who do firmly believe. You know, you get that confirmation bias and cognitive dissonance, you know, difference between the type of investigators. So do you actually believe in Bigfoot?
I do believe. And the reason why I do is just there's too many experiences that people have reported, too many instances where there's very credible witnesses, like police officers and, you know, people that are in the military. You know, there have been other folks that just by them telling their story impacts their credibility overall as a person in society. That's one reason. And the other thing is there's so many things out in the world that we have no idea that exists, that we're constantly finding new species all the time, whether it's a different type of an ape, a smaller ape, or insects, or different lizards. There's all of these things that we just don't know about. I think even in my lifetime, we had large like squids that they thought exist that ended up washing up on the shore, and finally they say, yep, there's these humongous squids that exist out there. So yeah, that's why I think Bigfoot exists. We haven't found everything. We haven't discovered everything that's out there.
Yeah, and I think there's a world of difference between if you prove something like Bigfoot exists as opposed to UFOs, because if, you know, they find Bigfoot, it's like, okay, well, there's another species which has been hidden among these, you know, millions of acres of forest and, you know, remained undetected. But with, you know, stuff like UFOs, that goes into a whole different realm of people with faith, you know, challenging their view of the universe and creationalism and all their stuff. And that changes sure. life a lot if they kind of prove or release proof that aliens exist. I don't think if they turned around tomorrow and said, we prove that Bigfoot existed, too many people's lives are going to be changed by it.
I totally agree. I think that there's that whole like different connections, you know, you see where the mountain gorilla, as an example, I don't think that thing was really honestly discovered till maybe the early 1900s. And it ended up being something that we accepted, you know, but I, like you said, I think if it was like aliens or whatnot, it would be maybe a harder pill to swallow. Like, oh my gosh, we're not the only things out there in the universe, you know, maybe shake that faith and so forth. But I think it is something that is out there. It's not even a needle in a haystack. I mean, I've been in the Pacific Northwest. I've done some cool things and hiking in that area. And I tell you, it's a needle in, you know, millions of haystacks to be able to find something like that. So totally.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get that as well. It kind of reminds me of the whole D.B. Cooper thing where he jumps out of the plane and, you know, they found a little bit of the trace of money, but nothing else out of him. And it's right in that same area, that Pacific Northwest. So going on with the whole Bigfoot and you getting interested in it? Obviously, your friends and your family, they know that you're big into this. If you're crocheting stuff and you're doing all this research, so what do they think about you, you know, that interest that you have in Bigfoot? What's their opinion of it?
There's a lot of laughing that takes place. There's a lot of, hey, Frank, what are you going to do next? And I think I kind of egg it on a little bit. I have fun with it. Even though I am a true believer, I also, like to be lighthearted. And I think that helps out a little bit. I think if I was super serious and scientific about it and, getting up the magnifying glass and saying, I'm going on a Blue's Clues adventure, I think they'd probably kind of toss me out. But honestly, I think my family is accepting of the fun heartness that I have for this cryptid. I've actually joked with my wife before. Before we actually did a bunch of trips to the Pacific Northwest, she would say, "Are you kidding me? Like, you believe in this thing? This is..." And I said, "Hey, if you can't believe this, it's done. I think we need to divorce. I don't think I can be married to a non-believer. This is ridiculous." And so we joke about it. Now that we've been out there a few times, I've kind of influenced her. She's like, "I can see this. Things can get lost pretty darn quick out here, So they accept it, and it's fun. It really is.
Why would you say that perhaps definitive evidence of Bigfoot hasn't been found? Or if it has, who really are we trying to convince? Because, I mean, there's no reason for anybody to suppress necessarily the evidence, like you could say with UFOs. I mean, if there was enough evidence that, another species, a bipedal great ape existed out there, exactly what evidence do we need to find? Because there is footage, some of it is bad, some of it's not. Sure. Obviously, there's plenty of proof of, footprints and all this stuff. But, what do you think would constitute being definitive evidence that literally, if you had 2 minutes on a news show and said, "Look, this is the evidence that Bigfoot exists," what could you show?
We would need a body. I think that's where it'd come down to, whether it's alive or not alive. I think we need a body. And the reason why I don't think that we've found it thus far is I just don't think we've tried hard enough. Honestly, it's guys like me that are out in millions of acres of forest. And one guy is going to be able to go ahead and make the discovery? I don't think so. Or there's a group of people that think that they can conquer it. That's why I don't think this been found yet, is, these things are smart and they know how to hide. And, they are a little bit smarter than us when it comes to, nature, right? I mean, we're so far removed from that. You think some of us guys that, get out there trekking around that smell like humans, that, sound differently than any other forest animal, they're going to know how to hide, right? So I think that's kind of where it comes down to it, is they're just better at hiding than us. They're the world champions of hide and go seek, right? That's what I think it is we're going to need a body for sure.
Yeah, that's always kind of been my view, that, there are so many millions of acres of forest in the United States. I mean, I have problems sometimes finding my phone in the house, and I've got an iWatch and I can do that find my phone thing, and it still takes me like 5 minutes to find where I left my phone. So, trying to find Bigfoot, somewhere in like Redwood or something, it's impossible. I mean, even if you were talking about there were 500 of them and they've got a relatively decent level of intelligence, you're not finding those things. I mean, you'd need the entire National Guard out there going inch by inch, in a line to even stand a chance, So
right.
I definitely follow that thing that, yeah, if they're half decently smart, they're going to hide. I mean, we still somehow managed to find 30 new frog species a year, in the Ecuadorian rainforest.
Right. Yeah. So Frank, there's been a lot of expeditions that have tried to go out and find Bigfoot. There's been, some TV shows about finding Bigfoot. In fact, I think there was even one called Finding Bigfoot or something like that. And so they always put together these teams. And I know there's probably some solo efforts as well, but if you were going to captain one of those teams, how would you assemble your team, and what would you do differently than some of these other teams have done that maybe would bring you some success?
Yeah, I think that you have to take a scientific approach. I don't think that they're doing that completely. They have one scientist in the entire group, and then the rest of it is like enthusiasts and, you know, maybe some folks that do have some survival skills, you know, I would end up saying that your core group is going to be your scientists, and the other individuals that are kind of outlying of that core group are folks that do know, you know, the wilderness and how to stay safe and, you know, what to look for in terms of, okay, you may want to go ahead and traverse the land like this or so forth. But yeah, a core group of scientists, I think, is where it's at. So that way they can use technology and a scientific approach to the whole discovery of the species. That I think that's what's missing from this thing. And on top of it, this group is going to need cash. It's not going to be your weekend warriors that go out and find this thing. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be Doug and Bob come across it while, you know, drinking a Bud Light, you know. So I mean, that's the thing. We have to get scientific about it, and we got to get serious about it. And it's not going to happen with one of these TV shows that's just built for ratings.
I think that would actually make a good commercial, though, if like you've got two redneck hunters there drinking Bud Light, and Bigfoot comes over and snatches out their hands and says, "This tastes like piss," and throws it to the ground and runs off in the woods.
Yeah, that would be a great show.
Now, I did want to ask, are you interested in any other kind of cryptozoology stuff? I mean, where I grew up in England, the only kind of remotely interesting thing we had was the Loch Ness Monster up there in Scotland, which seemed a bit of a stretch. But then later on, when I saw, you know, satellite photos of like 60-foot long anacondas, you know, in the Amazon, it was like, well, yeah, this just could just be a freshwater sea snake, which hasn't been discovered or whatever. And so it wasn't really a big thing. But I mean, are there any other topics in cryptozoology which kind of interest you, which kind of bleed over?
I'm interested in all of it. I watch a lot of, you know, documentaries about different creatures and, you know, some of those amazing shows on the Discovery Channel and so forth. You know, like the Loch Ness Monster is a huge one. That's my wife's favorite is the Loch Ness Monster. I'm fascinated by Chupacabra. I'm fascinated by
the goat sucker, the Mexican goat sucker.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Exactly. Right. The Jersey Devil is another one out there. Mothman is another one.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've seen a couple of documentaries on him.
All of those are super fascinating. I think there's an actual map of the entire United States, and each state actually has a cryptid that's associated to it. I think on my Instagram, I posted a map of all the different cryptids. In Wisconsin, it's like a beast. And I'm going to mess this up, and everybody from Wisconsin is going to, you know, shake their fist at me. I think it's like the Braywood or Brayward beast. And it's basically, I think it's like a werewolf style type of creature. But yeah, I'm interested in all of it. I said to my wife, I said, well, when things kind of calm down a little bit and we can take some pretty amazing trips, I said, I'm hitting it all. I'm going on all the adventures. So we're going to hit the one in Wisconsin, the beast, to check it out. So yeah, it's super fun.
I'm glad to hear you actually pronounce Wisconsin in the correct way, like Wisconsin kind of, because I actually have a dog, a Vizsla. And their breed mostly comes from Wisconsin. And she actually barks in a Wisconsin accent. She's like, bah, bah.
Oh, that's awesome. Love it. Love it.
So have you ever heard the theory that Bigfoot is a shapeshifter?
I have. Yeah.
So what do you think about that theory?
I believe it comes from the original type of stories from the Native American tribes that talk about this wild man or hairy man that's, you know, can kind of straddle both the spiritual as well as physical. So, and I've heard that, and I totally respect and understand their belief in that. My personal opinion, I think it's just a physical creature. I don't think that there's anything that it can go ahead and hit different dimensions. I also don't believe that, you know, there's some type of connection between Bigfoot and aliens. I don't know if you've ever seen a lot of those graphics on t-shirts where it's got Bigfoot being, you know, like beamed up by the aliens, or you have an alien wearing a Bigfoot outfit. I don't think that any of those things actually are real. And again, I totally respect everybody's opinion, but in my own opinion is I think it's a physical creature. And I just don't buy the whole popping in and out of dimensions.
Now, do you think that Bigfoot is restricted to a few perhaps geographical areas in North America, or do you think it's worldwide? Because I think in the Himalayas, where I think the Yeti was what they originally called it there, there were multiple sightings. Do you think this is something which is all over the kind of northern hemisphere?
I think there's the, what is it, Florida that calls it the skunk ape, you know? Like the wood ape is another, and I think that's maybe Oklahoma, maybe that calls it the wood ape. So yeah, I do believe that there's, that it's all connected. And truly, I believe it's one creature that maybe has evolved depending on its climate. There's this ape that they believe it might be, which is called the giant Ampithecus. I believe those creatures stem from one creature that they believe that extinct because they that it did not evolve to the proper type of diet to be able to keep going. I think it was sustaining itself on like fruit and whatnot, and they don't believe that it evolved into a different type of diet. But I think it has. I that's where I think the origin of this thing came from, and I think each one of those areas where it's been sighted is just an evolution of that creature.
Yeah. Now I don't think Bigfoot's been given exactly the most flattering series of names, from like Bigfoot, the Abominable Snowman, the Yeti, and Sasquatch. Now, I've got a little bit of an admission to make here. Somebody told me that Sasquatch was a literal Native American translation for fat ass. And I should have known better, because I was like told this at age 37 and I had access to the internet, and I didn't bother fact checking it. And so for a couple of years, I actually generally thought it's like, oh, they are the Native Americans. They see this ape and they call it fat ass. Because I thought, well, that goes along with Bigfoot. I mean, if we're going to be throwing out insults, so I guess fat ass isn't the worst thing you could come up with. But
right.
Totally so true there. And, you know, going along that. So you got Bigfoot, right? What do you call more than one Bigfoot? Like, is it big feet? Is it Bigfoots?
Yeah. Let's set the record straight. We're gonna end up coining this phrase right here. Since we're talking about Sasquatch too, right? Let's go with like Sasquai. Let's rock with that. I think Sasquai is a good one for a plural for it. Or you know, if you go with Bigfoot, what's a plural for Bigfoot? Let's go with Biggies. Let's go with that. And honestly, I've actually done my research on this as well, on like what is a plural for it is, you know, just like for instance, the geese, there's a whole like, what is the term for the plurals of the gander or something, you know? So there is nothing that's out there that I've read where it talks about what a group of them would be. So I'm saying, let's go with Sasquai.
Well, this is your chance, Mike, because we have enough listeners. If you say it first on this show, it's pretty much your domain after that. You own it. Nobody can challenge it after it's been on here.
That's great.
Right? Now going back to the merchandise stuff you do on Etsy, you know, the crocheting and stuff. And, you know, I love looking at your memes on Instagram. I mean, they're hilarious, you know, the Bigfoot meme. Now, do you get many people kind of like buying that stuff you do on Etsy? I mean, and is it just from like North America, or do you get people from all over the world?
Yeah, I get mostly people from the U.S., and I think I only have like 5 items out there right now. I've sold a ton of stuff, and each one of my things that I sell, I actually name it. So if I end up crocheting a like emerald green type of or sage green scarf and then put a Sasquatch like patch on it, I'll create an entire story that goes along with it. So I'll make mention of that, you know, you've been tracking this great beast for the past 5 days, and you put down your pack and, you know, adjust your sage green scarf, and across the meadow, you see the great ape, you know, the hunt is over. You've won type of thing. I mean, I do a bunch of different stories based on like the color of each one of my scarves. So if I do something that's like a golden yellow, I'll talk about like the season of the trees changing and whatnot. And again, you're hunting through the forest, or you're camping out and you hear some rustling in the woods. So I love to do it. I think it's a combination of both, you know, stitching something together with my hands as well as stitching together a story. And that's super fun for me.
You know, we talked before about, you're going to have some physical evidence. You're going to have a body, Right. And so let's say there's a legitimate spotting out there. You know, there's going to basically be two kinds of groups that are going to go out there. There's going to be the hunters, and they're going to go out there to shoot to kill and bag it just like they would a deer or an elk or something like that. But let's say the scientific community went out there and used one of those little like tranquilizer dart guns or whatever, and they captured him. And him or her, you know, let's not assume the Bigfoot gender, right? You know, him, her, they, something like that, right? So so now we've snagged, whatever it is, we got us a Bigfoot, right? So do you think after that, and they do their scientific studies and all that, do you think that Bigfoot would end up in a zoo?
For the sake of the species, I would hope that it wouldn't end up in a zoo. I think that there's going to be a lot of folks that end up going down that route. Again, for the sake of the species, you know, sometimes I wonder, do we even want to find this thing? Is it more about the search and more about the hunt and more about this like potential of this beast rather than finding this species and end up doing exactly the same thing that we've done with every other animal that we've ever encountered? I think for the sake of the of this animal, maybe we shouldn't find it. You know, I hate to say that because God, it would be one of the most amazing discoveries, you know, in history. I don't want to see things happen to it like the Tasmanian tiger, right? I wouldn't want to see it go extinct because of, you know, humanity.
Yeah. And I think that's the problem because, you know, every hunter is going to go out there trying to snag themselves a Bigfoot and get themselves a Bigfoot pelt and stuff. And so, you know, it's one of those things. I hope Bigfoot is real, but I hope it's almost never proved that it's real because I think it would be bad for the Bigfoot, and the benefit to humankind is very minimal proving it exists because, like I said, it's not that huge of a leap of faith that there's some big, you know, ape out there who's a little bit smarter, a little bit more evolved than a lot of apes and, you know, hides out. I mean, I hope it just continues that way and the fascination with Bigfoot is just that. Because it would be, I think it'd be a terrible thing, you know, if it's suddenly put in zoos and hunters go out there trying to snag it. Because, you know, I think you get some hunters going out there for a weekend, they don't find it, they give up. But once you provide definitive proof it exists, they're going to be spending 2 weeks or a month trying to find it and hunt it down, you know. Yep. So I hope they kind of never do produce definitive proof that, you know, Bigfoot's out there.
I kind of agree with that 100%.
So I do have a couple of trivia questions for you, Frank. And I didn't look up the answers, so you can actually BS your way through this. So
Sasquatch.
The word Sasquatch, where does it come from and what does it mean? And not all fat ass, like somebody told me.
All right. So from what I recall, it comes from a Native American tribe in Canada. And I think the tribe is called the Stalis tribe, if I'm correct. It also pronounced Chehalis. And back in like the 1930s, there was an individual that was what they called an Indian agent, which was given access to a tribe and give government, the Canadian, to interact in with the affairs of the Native American tribes. And so he ended up this individual with this Native American tribe, and that's where it came into play. They called the ape, the ape human, they called it Sasquet, I believe. It's Sasquet, I believe. And Burns ended up then calling it Sasquatch because, of course, you know, trying to pick up exactly what was being said and ended up, you know, making it into something that, you know, he thought it sounded like Sasquatch. So that is where I believe the origin of the name came from.
That's a nice story, Frank, but I still think it means fat ass in Navajo or something. now, second trivia question. When was the first recorded sighting of Bigfoot?
Ooh, here we go. First modern recording of Bigfoot. Couple different ones. One of those things is a famous book that was written by Teddy Roosevelt, I believe in like 1864. I think it was called The Wilderness Hunter. He ended up writing about an encounter that a mountain man ended up having with this great huge ape. And it ended up taking out the trapping camp that this mountain man was at. And the encounter ended with his colleague actually getting his neck snapped by this creature between the Idaho and Montana border. So that is one of the earliest documented encounters that we know of. Another one that I would say that I know about was in 1924, there was a group of prospectors, miners in the Mount St. Helens area that came across a bunch of Bigfoot. So a Sasquatch of Sasquatch, and they threw boulders down at these prospectors, and prospectors apparently said that they shot one that fell off of the cliff. And then later that night, the apes came and started ransacking their cabin and throwing boulders and slamming their bodies up against the cabin. And then they ended up bringing back rangers to the area to discover what was going on. Of course, you know, none of this can be proven, but those are a couple of the earliest recorded instances or encounters of Sasquatch.
I was kind of wondering what Theodore Roosevelt was doing, because wasn't he the one, what was his wife's name, Eleanor? Whatever, because she was actually, I think, the one who was supposed to be pretty much running the whole presidency, because Theodore was... he had his mind on other things, so maybe that was it. He was trying to find out about Bigfoot, and he left Bigfoot. His wife to kind of make all the decisions about running the White House and stuff. I don't know.
I was pretty floored at that. You should, if you have a chance, everybody, check out the number of animals that Teddy Roosevelt had. It's insane. That guy had just an insane, a zoo of animals. It was crazy. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, if he did have a Bigfoot, it would have probably bitten less people than Joe Biden's dog at the moment. So.
That's crazy.
So I noticed, Frank, you've got a shirt on with a Wookiee, Chewbacca, on there.
There you go.
And just wondering if you had heard about the filming of Return of the Jedi back in 1982 and what the folks had to do with Peter Mayhew in the Chewbacca Wookiee costume.
I am a huge Star Wars fan. I don't know if you can, let me see. I'm going to pan over this direction. You see that I have an X-Wing fighter rocking that right there. Yep, exactly. Cool. So yes, I bought this shirt specific for that story right there. It's got Chewbacca, and he is definitely in that typical Sasquatch pose, you know, that Bigfoot pose that we all know from the 1967 Patterson-Gimlin footage. But yeah, I heard about that. They're like, hey, you may not want to go too far without some type of vest on, because you're going to get taken out by some type of hunter. That's insane, though. I've actually been in that location where that was filmed, and that is no joke. I'm telling you right now, you don't want to end up looking like a Bigfoot out there, for sure.
Absolutely. And so going along with that Star Wars kind of theme, and I've seen the movie once or twice, and so has the Wolf. We're obviously kidding. We're huge Star Wars fans too. So in a fight, who wins, Chewbacca or Bigfoot?
Okay, does Chewbacca have a blaster hand? Or is this
oh, no.
hand-to-hand
combat? No, this is hand-to-hand combat. No weapons whatsoever.
You know, I would say that I'm going to have to go with Bigfoot. I really am going to have to, because I tell you what, Chewbacca, yes, has some smarts and whatnot, but just the fierce, ferocious, things that I've heard about what Bigfoot can do, I guarantee you that thing would probably rip Chewbacca apart limb from limb. I'm just going to throw it out there. So Sasquatch, Bigfoot wins.
Yeah, but hang on. See, we should have actually asked that question at the very beginning, because if you're going to side with Bigfoot over Chewbacca, we could have just ended the podcast right there and said, we picked the wrong Bigfoot expert here.
I know. I get it. I was trying to be what would seriously happen? Seriously, though, I'm Chewbacca, I'm telling you right now, love it. I'll go ahead and say agree. It's Chewbacca. I've changed my mind. Chewbacca would do some type of kung fu moves. Something, I guarantee there's some Wookiee type of combat fighting stuff that
monkey style, you know, kung fu.
Yeah.
Well, I've actually got a fact which might impress both of you. In 2004, there was an expanded Star Wars universe comic book come out called Into the Great Unknown, and it actually has the Millennium Falcon crashing in North America. Han Solo dies in the crash, and Chewbacca survives, and he becomes the origin of the legend of Bigfoot.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
It's called Into the Great Unknown, yeah.
Okay, I will definitely do that.
I looked that up just to purposely piss over both of your parades and come out like knowing more than anybody. But
that's awesome. So great.
One question I did want to ask. We had a little bit of a chat with you about a week ago, and you spoke about something called a knocking stick. Now, the Shepherd and I thought a knocking stick was something which a pimp has, but apparently it's got some use in like Bigfoot hunting and stuff. Can you explain what a knocking stick is?
You bet. So it is believed that the Sasquatch, I'm going to go with it, Sasquatch communicate with each other by knocking wood together or knocking against trees. And so for us non-Bigfoot folk, we end up using a knocking stick to be able to bang against trees and see if they will communicate back. And it's something that I've been known to do. If you check me out on Instagram, if you check me out on TikTok, knocking up against trees, doing what as a Bigfoot call. So I guess that's just a way for them to communicate with each other.
Well,
I don't know if it's actually used in any other type of ape species. I have not yet dived into that, but that might be part of the origin piece.
Well, I'd actually read that among certain species of primates that they will actually communicate by making sounds with sticks on trees. And depending upon the tribe of apes or whatever, that however many times they knock or the gaps between the knock, it kind of warns them of predators, of this stuff. So, I mean, it's obviously not far-fetched. I mean, if anything, you know, you think about how tribes communicate through smoke signals or, you know, versions of Morse code. I mean, it should be pretty obvious that, yeah, maybe that is what they use to communicate. I mean, over distance.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, you hit the right type of tree and that thing echoes, you know, for days. And, you know, I almost envision this thing where you have, you know, one knocker, you know, being able to relay one communication to one, and then just down the line, it's almost very much like, you know, I think about the Great Wall of China, where they'd have like certain spots, you know, set up so that way they could, you know, put some type of signal in the air to warn the next one down and the next one down. So I totally think that it's plausible.
Well, if Apple would make one, I'd probably get one because I have Sprint and my service sucks. So a lot of times I would think I'd probably be better off just smacking a stick against a tree to get a hold of my kids when they won't answer their phone. And they always blame it on Sprint, which is now T-Mobile. So one of these days I'm going to shop around and maybe get me some better service. So
love it.
So before we kind of close out, Frank, I wanted you to fill us in on your visit to the Bigfoot Museum.
Yeah, that was a few years ago. I made the like 2,500 mile trek to California, to Willow Creek, California, to be able to go to the Bigfoot Museum. I was super pumped about it. And it ended very much like it ended for the Griswold family that went on their great adventure to Wally World. I got there and it was completely shut down. It was one of the days that they shut the museum down. I said, sorry, we're not open on Thursdays or whatever the day was. I think it was either a Thursday or Tuesday that they were shut down. And I was devastated. And anybody that knows me knows that I am relentless. I will make things turn a water wine. And that's what I did, is I started making some connections. I went from one restaurant to one convenience store, and I said, hey, who knows a person that runs that museum over there? And I finally got a hold of somebody at a gift shop that says, well, I have her name and phone number. I said, great. Can I go ahead and grab that from you? I want to give him a call. And I gave him a call and I said, hey, I traveled 2,500 miles to be able to come see you. This is my dream. This is my destiny. I need you to help me out. And she goes, all right, it's my day off, but I'll go ahead and come in for you. So that was awesome. You know, such an amazing woman to be able to open that up for me. And it was funny because there was at least five or six other people that were standing there devastated, thinking, I made it all the way up here and I didn't get in the museum. And when she opened it up, there was applause. It was awesome. So that was my little story about going to the Willow Creek Bigfoot Museum.
Well, that's fantastic, man. Now, before we kind of wrap up, Bigfoot, he's appeared in, like, I think 10 Bugs Bunny cartoons, and he's a bit touchy-feely, and he keeps referring to Bugs Bunny as lady. So do you think he's next in line for cancel culture? You know, after Pepe Le Pew kind of went out for being a little bit rapey, do you think, you know, the Abominable Snowman's going to be the next victim on the Warner Brothers list or what?
I don't think so. You know, and yeah, maybe there is some of that like disclaimer stuff that's going to happen in front of those pieces. Yeah. But I think that the it's one of those things where the Bigfoot story is across all cultures, right? You know, it's this hairy ape. It's this wild man. Every single culture has its version of this thing. Yeah, you might see a disclaimer on it, but I don't think it's going anywhere.
Right. Now, Frank, can you let everybody know, all our listeners know, how they can get in touch with you, your social media in terms of Instagram, the Etsy store, your email address? I mean, we'll obviously post all those links, you know, on our website, on our Facebook, on our YouTube and everything else. But, you know, just let the listeners know, you know, if they've got any questions, how they can get in touch with you, how they can buy some of your merchandise on Etsy, and just let them know how they can get in touch with you, Ben.
Best thing is to just go on Instagram, check me out on a Squatch Stitcher. That's my handle out there. DM me with any questions. I also have a link to my Etsy page, which is a Squatch Stitcher page in the bio of Instagram. I'm also on Facebook as Squatch Stitcher. You can hit me up on all those channels. And then also I'm Squatch Stitcher on TikTok. So I have a few fun videos. I like to share little things. I think the last video I did was me and my wiener dog out for some type of urban Sasquatch adventure. So hit me up on all those channels. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Frank, and great, Frank, all at the same time, and kind of got a little tongue-tied there. So, well, thanks, Frank, for tuning in with us and spending some time talking about Bigfoot, and we hope everybody will go and check you out on there. And that's going to do it for this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd podcast. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, thewolfandtheshepherd.com, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes when you get a chance. Check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for additional content. Join us next time for another episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd.